We're coming in. We're coming into this point because we're already talking about this.
All right, let's do this.
Folks, welcome to Ubuntu Vista. It's
a bonus
episode.
We're on.
Yes. Oh, no, we're rolling now. We're rolling now. We started talking about movies. I was like,
press the button.
Push the button.
We shouldn't be talking for free, Andrew.
No, that's true. I don't speak to my family at all because they're not paying me.
That's right. Everything is transactional, folks, and nothing is free.
Yep.
It's just
when one of my kids tries to ask me for something, for some food or whatever, or they want to know something about life, a concept they're trying to understand, I just stand there with my arms crossed and then I reach over and tap the laminated become a patron sign.
Absolutely. Every time that my kids, which are real and exist, want to go to school, I make them pull out the Uber app, book a trip from our house to the school, and I'll open my Uber app and I'll accept the trip unless there is a more profitable trip for me to take, and that's just good economics.
Yeah. It's just basic business.
All
right. So, what Theo had just said to me before he came in here, what Theo had just said was that he has seen like 10% of the superhero movies out there.
Yeah. Generously 10%.
He has seen Spawn.
I've seen Spawn. Let's just get that out there.
Spawn is not funny on purpose, except for John Leguizamo playing the Violator, the clown.
Yep.
Doing his farts and smelling them.
Yep. The horrible 1990s CG farts that I watched on VHS. The copy of Spawn on VHS that I owned as a young person.
So you remember, for example, in Spawn, he goes to hell at the end.
He does go to hell at the end, and then the infamous shot of the devil like standing over the pools of hell or whatever, and it's
a real dog shit.
You know, it reminds me of the boss from the first episode of Quake.
It's like there is one tile of fire going around the whole thing, and there's all these floating islands that all have demons on them that are clearly like a slightly modified version of the Spawn costume. It just doesn't have a cape or whatever. And they're all doing the same looped animation.
Yeah.
It's very clearly the same clip.
And that one shot cost $40 million. I don't know. Probably not.
Terrible stuff. So this extends to the Green Lantern movie, which we were also just talking about, and I was saying, real stinker. Because as a concept, the Green Lantern thing, I was never familiar with this particular superhero. A lot of DC superheroes, I feel like I'm just not across, you know? So the Green Lantern's deal is that he uses whatever the fuck the power is, the power of positive energy or some shit, believing in things and looking at them. And with his ring, and he can, like, project stuff with his ring, but it can be anything he can think of.
Is this just the system, the superhero? Is it the system? No, what's it called? What's the Oprah book?
Oh, The Secret.
The Secret.
Yeah.
It's just The Secret.
He visualizes
superhero.
It.
Just visualizes
it. It's just the laws of attraction. Yeah, and he projects it out of his ring, so, like, you know, he... like Ryan Reynolds' character in this winds up going, "Well, I'm going to project that I'm in a car, like just a green glowing car.
I'm going to project that I'm happy."
It's a concept. It's a concept that is very obviously just better suited to a comic book. It's a thing that, like, every instance of them just trying to show how this power works just falls totally flat and looks like shit. Everybody in the movie is CGI just about. Ryan Reynolds' whole suit is fucking CGI. And it's not good.
It was really not a great time for superhero movies. I've got to tell you. Because there's this weird wave, right? So X-Men came out. And superhero movies became very, very popular. And then everybody...
Spider-Man 1 as well? The Tobey Maguire Spider-Man? 1,
that's right. So X-Men and then Spider-Man 1, I think they were pretty close together, right?
Yeah, and very big.
But then all these other movies that obviously came out trying to ride the wave.
X-Men 2.
X-Men 2, legitimately good movie. You know who wrote X-Men 2?
Was it fucking... You tell me.
It's the guy that voiced Solid Snake.
Huh.
David Hayter. But so my point with those is that they kind of think, oh, well, you know, it's the big action smash. That's the appeal of this. And then they just farted out all of these
things that are like Daredevil. 90%
effects shots and that sort of thing. It's like, no, those movies actually had really sharp, clever scripts. I mean, I'd probably go back to them and watch them and they were bad. But I remember at the time thinking like, oh, this is actually...
Oh, by comparison to those legitimately funny, ones, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So, you know, the Green Lantern one, it was sort of in the window between, like, when there were some superhero movies that kind of sparked the interest, and then, like you're saying, a wave of shit, starting with stuff like, you know, the Daredevil and Elektra movies, a lot of the really dud Marvel ones, all the things that aren't considered part of their current canon.
Mm.
And sort of ending around this Green Lantern, Ryan Reynolds phase before they kicked off their new DC universe, you know. And as them demonstrating a power, it just doesn't work at all, and it sucks. Whereas Ryan Reynolds went on to do the Deadpool movies, which I was just saying, I think they're good. They are sharply written and very gory, which I like for a... like a comic book movie, like Logan, the last Wolverine movie.
That's correct. But
that was a hard R, and he is just like lopping the tops of dudes' heads off with his claws.
Watch that on Wednesday. It honestly sounds great.
He's just going hard and legit stabbing dudes through the skull with his big claws, like real gory, chopping off arms and shit the way that it should be with your big titanium claws. And, so, in the second Deadpool movie, they have a superhero in that called Domino, and her superpower is that she's very lucky. And there is a whole sequence in the film in which Deadpool is, like, on the headset or whatever, saying to her and the audience, well, that's not really a superpower. That doesn't make any sense. You know, how would you even show that? It's not a thing that really translates visually. Doesn't really work in a movie. And as he's saying this, there's a whole sequence going on with her that's extremely well done. And I remember going, huh, so that's how you would visualize someone being insanely lucky and it benefiting them in a superhero sense. So, you know, it shows it can be done depending on what the thing is. The Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern movie, it was not done. It was not done. It was a bad time. And of course, I don't want to get it confused with the Green Hornet remake.
Oh, God. I realized that I have been getting this confused.
With Green Hornet, Rogen one?
With Green Hornet. No, is that... So, Green Hornet... Is Green that Hornet like the parody is the, of it?
Green Lantern is a DC superhero.
Oh, okay.
Right? Of the original sort of The Flash and Batman kind of era.
Which one has a car? The Green Hornet has a car. Which one's the real one?
They are both real things.
Green Lantern.
Green Lantern is a DC thing. The Green Hornet, I'm not sure where that originated, but...
Jesus Christ, this is so confusing. I'm going to become a hermit.
But it was a TV show in the 60s that Bruce Lee was in.
The Green Hornet.
I believe so.
Okay.
Folks, we're here with you. We're talking. We're just talking. We do need to just... Hold on, let's pump the brakes for a second. Pump.
I'm pumping it.
And we need to have a moment of somber reflection. You know, we need to... take this seriously. Come on. A man's life is in the toilet again.
Being laid bare by himself.
Once again, a man's life has fallen through a plastic chair and onto a stage in front of everybody, his pants coming down around his ankles.
Being hoisted by his own petard, and his petard is also full of diarrhea from his overflowing diaper.
It's all over his polo shirt that he wore to the PM's 11 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. How many years ago was it? 6 years ago?
And this is going to be an extremely expensive polo shirt to clean, I would say.
To clean all that diarrhea from, yes. We are, of course, talking about Mark Latham, who it was announced today had settled his defamation suit from Osman Faruqi. Mark Latham will be paying damages. Mark Latham will also be paying for the legal costs of everyone involved.
Him, Osman's legal costs, the legal costs of his three legal teams at this point, is that correct?
Well, He had a legal team originally, and they submitted a defense that was so absurd that the judge tossed the entire thing out.
So this is my favorite part of it, right? That we all remember that he wrote something, just this insane screed to crib someone else on Twitter that's like basically blaming the Saracens for his like discrimination, and now. The fact that it's taken so long to go through that screed has incurred all of these legal costs for everybody involved.
He's dragged it out to being a year long because he's...
Incredible. And now he actually has to pay, legal costs commensurate to the length of his diatribe.
Just ridiculous. It's going to be hundreds of thousands of dollars.
So leading into this, right? A common thing I saw tweeted was like, I hope that Osman enjoys the house that Mark is buying for him. And I'm just sort of going, it's nice to be optimistic, right? It's nice to have dreams.
But it turns out. Oh, man.
What a week.
Yeah, it's a big pie in the face of old Marky. It's a bad look. It really does make you wonder, like very genuinely, completely. All right, try for a moment if you can. Step outside of your body. Trip your body over. No, step outside of your body and imagine that you had no preconceived feelings about Mark Latham and you hadn't seen his massive history of shitting himself all the time. Like, surely if you just knew about him, hey, he has been fired from... You know, the Australian Financial Review, from Sky News, from the Labour Party, from the Lib Dems, Rebel TV. He has been fired from all of these different things. Has a public history of just bullying people until he gets sacked for it. And now add to that, guilty of defamation not guilty, but... That's only because he said, yes, fine, just please don't rinse me as hard as That's you fucking right. could.
Yeah.
Now, this was another angle that I thought about this from, which is that he is such a piece of shit about all this sort of stuff. Like you said, he drags things out so long and so spitefully.
Yeah.
That it makes me think, like... And again, in the context of that initial legal defense, which was just absolutely absurd, the whole thing just absolutely wild to read. And it makes me think, how bad must it have been to get him to have to agree to saying, fine, we'll settle the case and pay out your costs and damages.
You can't see him kind of responding to this in good faith, though, right? That be like, from now on, it's going to be, oh, well, you know, I wasn't found guilty. You know, I was never found guilty of defamation, which, you know...
Yeah, he's going to run for One Nation with, like, the tagline, never convicted.
Never convicted. Because that classic innocent move is buying your accuser a new house.
Yeah, all those people who, you know, get caught for things and... Well, yeah, all those people who get caught for stealing from their work and they get to say, I'll just give it back. Which doesn't really happen. That's purely reserved for like banking executives. So we really do need to just throw out a big old eat shit, Mark Latham, you ridiculous, ridiculous man. You have done this to yourself,
mm-hmm.
and you absolutely deserve it.
Mm. I hope your pubes fall out.
Very hairy stomach, no pubes.
Just completely smooth genitals.
Oh, dear. Should we take some questions?
I'd love to take some questions tonight, Andrew.
I rudely insisted that our patrons immediately send us questions.
And they do it under duress. They send in hundreds of their horrible questions under absolute duress.
So I said, bang us your questions about your music, your movies, your video games.
Mm.
You guys did it. You did it.
Good on you.
Good on... Oh, you did it, guys. Good on you. All right. What have we got? Up first. friend of the show, Dooney, the Doonster.
Hello, Dooney.
Olds. No, got nothing. I'm getting out of that one.
Dooneropolis.
Frank Herbert's Dune.
Oh, yeah, I like that. Not the book, the name. Can we just talk about how bad the book Dune is?
Oh, I feel like you're going to get some angry responses.
Have you read Dune?
I have not read Dune.
It is, all right. People.
What
like
if Christian
this.
McRae hears you saying this?
People like this book. I've told Christian McRae. All right, I'll tell him again. It's totally unbelievable to me that people enjoy this book. I'm sorry, things are subjective. It's fine, but it
is. That's how I feel about, like, Tim Winton.
Incredibly wooden. Maybe, you know, maybe it's one of those things where it's like, oh, no, you have to read all seven series of them and the
Can I roll it back and ask, what is your general tolerance for written sci-fi like? Very high?
I don't read a lot of written sci-fi, to be quite honest.
Okay.
I've not read a lot. I like... So I guess you could call Annihilation sci-fi more so than the movie.
I am thinking things more in the, like, classic Dune type of mold.
Yeah. No, I haven't read a huge amount, to be quite honest. But to me, it's largely inseparable from fantasy, right? It's just... You're just swapping... you know,
well, to me, there's two kinds of sci-fi, right?
Sure.
There is the kind that is exactly what you're talking about, your Star Wars, where you just say, well, I suppose it's that classic saying, you know, any sufficiently advanced technology would be indistinguishable from magic.
That's right. I mean,
and that is what that kind of sci-fi is.
Star Wars, they're literally fighting with swords.
Yes, they're fighting with swords. They have...
Instead of arrows, they've got guns. It's the same deal, right? You can judge them on the same terms.
They've got laser
sense.
Crossbows, and they literally use magic.
That's right.
So there's that kind. You know, they still do have spaceships and shit like that. Tractor beams, all that kind of jazz. But to me, it is very much what you're talking about. I find Star Trek to be in the same vein.
Never watched it. I did see that episode, that scene from the end of, I believe it's from the end of the second movie. I walked in when my parents were watching it, where I think Captain Poncho...
Kirk?
Yes.
Yeah.
gets an earwig put in his ear.
Oh, yeah.
And that's my entire impression of Star Trek. Not that it's bad, but anyway, It's not really for me.
It is like, you know, like people say, it's like fucking space UN, but it is still that type of thing you're talking about, where they're just like, we're going to make up an alien that has this kind of power.
Although I did read the other day that Star Wars, the actual TV series, had the first interracial kiss on TV.
That's true.
The actors, so they were to take two sets of takes, right? One which is actual contact, and then one that was just like the silhouette kind of thing with no contact that they could use because of things. And the actors continued to deliberately flub the non-kiss take. Which, you know, cool. Good for you guys. Anyway, so Star Trek, not for you, but what...
That kind of thing, too. The kind of sci-fi that does do it for me is like near future, recognizable version of our reality sci-fi.
Yeah, absolutely. And it kind of then lends something to say, like, it doesn't take that much of a stretch of imagination and this could be happening. Like,
You
know, Minority Report with the...
That's probably my go-to example.
Yep.
Minority Report. Like, even just stuff like, you know, the very iconic thing of Tom Cruise's character using the motion control for the video editing and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. The Matrix is obviously another perfect example.
But you'll notice that where the Matrix went off the rails is where they went into the, like, look at these big space alien computer android AI
that's
things.
Definitely where it came off the rails is where it stopped being a parallel
for
humanity.
As soon as it left a recognizable version of your world, I think.
Yeah.
And I really like Minority Report for that reason. I really like the Tom Cruise, Steven Spielberg War of the Worlds remake. It's fucking
that in
boss.
Cinemas, but it struck me as very strange, but...
It is one of my top five, if not top three, favorite movies of all time.
Well, considering we're going through great Tom Cruise sci-fi, did you enjoy... all I can think of is Live, Die, Repeat. Groundhog Day 2.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah, man, that was good. That was a good movie.
If you're listening and you haven't watched Edge of Tomorrow, it is fantastic. Go and watch that movie. It's really good.
It is really good. And yeah, I like it. Like, I'm a big time advocate for late career sci-fi Tom Cruise.
Hmm.
Good movies. Fucking good movies. Oblivion. I know a lot of people didn't dig Oblivion that much. But, you know, great art direction, nice soundtrack by M83.
Ooh. That sold me.
Yeah. No, it's good. It's a good looking movie. Yeah, that type of sci-fi is absolutely what does it for me. You know, like you were saying with Minority Report, even just all the little things, the like hologrammatic newspaper. Looper is another good example in that genre.
Yeah, Looper's a really good movie.
Looper, like the way that all the cars are like converted from a previous fuel source.
Was Looper Denis Villeneuve, or is that? I have to look this up.
No.
You keep talking.
I'm going to say no. So, look. In answer to Dooney's question, how is the horse game going for you, Theo?
Dune sucks. really? Is that the question?
Yeah. That's.
Oh, my God. Oh, sorry.
That's how far we got from Frank Herbert's Dune. Luke
was directed by Rian Johnson, the director of the best Star Wars movie. While I'm making a rod for my back.
Moon.
And Moon. Wait, really good movie.
No, that's Duncan Johnson. Fucking sorry, hell, not Ryan Johnson. Of course it's Duncan sorry, Johnson. Sorry, sorry. I'm glad I caught myself there before very good. People started getting wind of that.
Hmm.
So how is Red Dead Redemption 2?
Oh, I haven't played it for a little while. It's tricky because it feels like a very exclusionary activity to play in a house that I share with Borat voice.
Yes. I know that feeling. I know that feeling.
Yeah. I do enjoy it. So, I'm up to chapter 2. I haven't gotten far. I like it for all the reasons that people find it idiosyncratic. But to me... So, a lot of things have been said about it being like... I have a quarter of an almond in my throat. Don't ask. Being a very kind of auteurish kind of thing where somebody has clearly had a real hold on this game to make it slow, to make it considered, to make it deeper than you'd expect in all of the systems, but still taking a lot of time to discover and that kind of thing, right? So, and that doesn't do it for a lot of people. People don't like necessarily the speed at which things happen, the fact that you have to take time to do things. And I love it for all of those reasons, right? And this world that kind of develops around you where it really, to me, it feels like the most complete world presented in a game. Just for all of the things, all of the work that they've put into, right? So that you can go somewhere and have the world kind of respond in a good way, but at least have many layers of responding. And on through all of the systems, you know, you've seen like things where a horse will fall in the mud and the mud will leave the imprint of the horse and the horse will stand up and be muddy on that side and then all this kind of deal, right? Like all these little details adding up. But I was chatting to my good friend the other day about this and why there's something that feels off. And to me, it feels like they, and to him as well, that the... they haven't gone actually far enough in all of this stuff. So they present all these things, but it's still a rock star game, right? It's still like GTA 5 where you'll be riding along the street and there'll be this wacky encounter and everyone posts these things like where this guy's like, you know, oh, help me change my horse's shoe and then the horse kicks him in the head and he dies, right? And all of this sort of stuff I think serves to keep people interested, but it also serves to take me out of the world. Where I can
Sort of makes you go, oh, someone scripted that.
someone scripted that, exactly, right? So you go in and you're like, oh, well, this is a thing that was set up for me to discover. It didn't, it didn't emerge naturally.
But I put it to you that there is also the possibility that you could play this whole game back again. And a bunch of these things either you wouldn't see, and in fact you would see some other random encounter, scripted or otherwise, and that if you have the same encounter again, you don't necessarily know that that's how that encounter is going to go.
Well, I would dispute that because everybody... So, I saw the horse thing posted a bunch, right? Mm-hmm. And then I came across it and it occurred exactly the same way for me as it happened for everybody. And I did see that event exactly once.
Well, yeah.
So, same thing with like discovering the KKK. You can find them in the forest at night. They will do like one of three things, right? So to me, like it's not like... And then like again, you know, you'll be walking along. There'll be a guy. He'll be in a field. He'll be shooting birds. That's a challenge. You've got to do the challenge. It goes in your list of challenges. Like, I was listening to our good friend of the show, Trevor Strunk, on No Cartridge podcast, and they were talking about it as well, and with Alex from Giant Bomb, and I did agree with a lot of their assessments that you know, much of this is very, very kind of deep and that sort of thing, but there's still all these, but where I disagree with them is where, you know, they said, well, it doesn't feel like you're going through checklists, on this. And to me, there still is like, so, you know, you're playing Assassin's Creed or what have you, and there's this big world and there's all these little dots on the map, you know, it's the classic Ubisoft thing. And then you've got to go to the dots on the map and things happen and then the dots disappear.
Yeah.
And you have to check off all the things or else, well, something bad happens to you psychically. Because apparently, you know, I can't just not complete these things. I agree that definitely that doesn't happen on the map in this, but there's still these underlying checklists that kind of go where it's, well, you have to go and win three poker games in a row to get this ticked off and that sort of thing. Whereas I would have loved to see them just go fully emergent, right? Like a Cowboy Skyrim, where everything is just this world kind of reacting to it. And
it's so hard, though.
The events and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's so hard, though, because, like, obviously, I absolutely understand the reasons of the appeal in that. But by the same token, they need to be able to sell the game. And what percentage of people who buy a AAA title would necessarily be happy with just Cowboy Simulator 2018.
This slow art house kind of,
And I'm absolutely, like, I'm totally not saying that, like, you know, they're right and you're wrong, or that there isn't a, like, different appeals to both of those things. What I think would be more likely is if, like, they were to put out a version of this game that was the full narrative, all the side missions type thing, and just a version that is, like, literally Red Dead Sandbox.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you could potentially put the two things out on, like, on the same disc kind of thing.
For sure, yeah. Yep. I think that would be a very anti-Rockstar move, though.
But that's also kind of what the end game of those games eventually turns into.
It is, but to me, like, so GTA 5, for example, if you're not considering online, which as far as I'm concerned doesn't exist, it's just like, at that point, all the dots in the map have disappeared.
Mm.
So you're left with stealing cars, right? There's no real, like, deep systems involved that you can continue interacting with. It's like all of the things
Just you can go around and do the activities that are predefined, or you can and all shoot of
the,
strangers.
Like, the things that respond to stimulus have responded now and they are spent. Whereas I feel like they could have gone further with that in, but by the same token, I still think that it pushes things in the right directions. I'm obviously just glossing over the entire labor issues thing. I don't think this is the episode to talk about it. It sucks. The Hauser brothers suck. The whole setup sucks. I'm glad that this game exists, and I think people who made it would like to hear people talking about it in positive terms, and it is clearly a labor of thousands of people over, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of hours. And that kind of like shows up in that detail that we, you know, we're talking about.
Yeah. I was just thinking to myself about things like GTA that when you were talking about, like, you know, the horse falls into the mud and leaves an imprint and comes up with mud there. Like, I remember thinking that when I played GTA 5 for the first time and you, like, walk into the water shin deep on the beach and walk back out and that part of your pants is wet.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it stays like a particular kind of wet.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
It's not just like the persistent bullet holes kind of thing. It's that they've very clearly actually, like, modeled how this fabric behaves when it has just been submerged in water up to the point it's submerged in, and then it dries out over time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank Naughty Dog for that one. They truly pioneered man walking slightly into water and getting wet up to a certain point and then slowly drying out technology in the Uncharted games.
But I remember thinking to myself with Grand Theft Auto 5 when I had some of those sorts of moments, oh, they've done it again. This is the most complete world that you can just exist in in a video game.
Absolutely.
And that's the way I remember feeling about GTA 4 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty remarkable when you think about it that there is a singular company that can continue to, like, redefine that as an experience with games.
But I would love to see, again, that not being the sideshow, right? I would love to see that being the thing that you're there for, right? So if they can develop these worlds that are incredible and immersive, right? I would love the incredible immersion of that world to be the game that you have to go walk around. Like, you can, in this game, you know,
you want to peg out your long johns.
Well, that's right. But I mean, in this game, you can walk around and go howdy and to everybody in the town, right? And then slowly your cowboy meter goes up. but like, and it's like, well, you know, wow, you can say howdy to people. Like, that's cool. I mean, of course, I've been walking around hitting the howdy button nonstop, but again, like, it would be nice if that was the gameplay to come out, like, that you develop relationships with the people that you live around and that sort of thing, instead of it just all being window dressing for the most expensive narrative ever made.
I still don't buy, based on what you were describing before, I still don't buy that you would be able to find the satisfying version of that which didn't still at some granular level come off to you as being a bunch of scripted encounters.
No, absolutely. I agree, without great developments in AI and all that sort of stuff. But I will say that when, for example, The Sims came out, the concept that this entire game was just around building relationships with, like, your neighbors and that sort of thing, and, like, there's no story, you just do it. And if you want to put a hot tub in your front yard and be the dad that just bathes nude in your hot tub in the front yard, that's a thing that you can do, right? The entire game was that. So I will say that we, at some point, that was unimaginable. And then they did it. So, and there are plenty of things out there, plenty of roguelikes and that kind of thing that show that this is possible, right? That these kinds of systems can exist, you know, Dwarf Fortress and Prison Architect and all these sorts of things. It is possible, but it is a pipe dream of mine that would be a AAA title.
That's fair enough.
That's just for me. That's just for me. If the world was just based around me, what a beautiful thought that is.
Well, let me segue from that to I did get a couple of questions about Black Ops 4 today.
Blops. Mm.
Blops, which
Blops Quattro.
So, as a segue from the concept that you were talking about, somebody asked me how the single player is, and I said, well, it basically doesn't have single player. They have done away with the conventional single player campaign. And I saw an article of somebody
disgusting.
Saying...
disgusting.
Somebody
saying... How far from God's light have we strayed?
Well, there you go. Like, the question was, oh, you know, how many people are going to be, like, completely put off the game by this? And my first thought was, like, who the fuck plays the campaign in a Black Ops game?
I would play just the campaign and then throw it out.
Yeah.
I am uninterested, totally uninterested in competitive multiplayer.
Well, and that's the thing. Since I have been playing it like that for the last however many years, I was like, cool, drop the fucking campaign. The last one I would have maybe started playing the first level of it. And I was like, fuck that.
Disgusting.
And it's because, as a parallel, that is the core engine of the game that most people are interested in. Is you get in this thing and play other people and try to win rounds or whatever. But you do it purely with the mechanic of how you can move and how you can use particular weapons. And to other people, trying to shoehorn that into, like, you know, linear levels and, like, a bunch of dialogue and cutscenes with characters and shit, it is all just worthless window dressing to that game.
I completely
agree with that sentiment.
That Titanfall 2 and the quality of the single-player campaign in that, what is ostensibly a multiplayer game, totally shows you for the asshole that you're being right now.
What? Son of a bitch.
It's so good.
I'll
have to send you. I'll send you my PS4 copy. I'm done with it. Because I played. Here's the thing, Andrew. I played the single player campaign, and now I'm done. There is a whole multiplayer mode there. The whole thing that it's built around, dropping titans on one another so that you can mash people District 9 style. And I am absolutely uninterested. I hear it's
really good, the multiplayer.
Yeah. But you know what else is good?
Not doing multiplayer. So, like, look, I think that's an interesting extension of the concept anyway, that, like, that is the core of that game that people are into. So, we did get a question here from wife of the show, Arky. Hello, Arky.
Hey.
Question, what's your favorite Black Ops character or characters to play, and do you like Team Deathmatch? I do. I do like Team Deathmatch. That's pretty much the only thing I play. I'll play a bit of Gun Game. I'll play a bit of, Gun Game every now and then, Team Deathmatch, and now Blackout, which is the Battle Royale version of Black Ops, which I was describing to somebody as like PUBG if it was made by someone who had made a video game before, which is good, which is much better. So, the only characters, or the characters I have been playing with so far, are just the ones from the last game, because I know what they do. The specialists, maybe the lady
so
with the big
right now.
The big grenade launcher.
Some Dota shit.
Oh, come on, man! It's just different game modes. It's fine.
But different characters as well.
Well, they're basically like, it's a thing they added in the last game where you have all of your classes, and custom classes and stuff, just weapon loadouts you can select for yourself. But they also added like.
But what happened to picking them up in the field, Andrew? Used to be you spawn with a pistol.
My goodness.
You have to pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
I like Prophet, the guy with the electricity gun. That's why I like Arky. Hey, we got a question here from, let me see if I'm saying this right, Luce Valentine. And she says...
Sure, man. If you got it wrong, that's on you.
It sounds fine to me. She says, what is your favorite film and why is it Men in Black 3? Men in Black 3 is a pretty good movie.
I haven't seen it. Does it count as a superhero movie? Because I haven't seen it.
Technically counts as a comic book movie. Men in Black was a comic book originally.
All right, I'm counting as a superhero movie. I haven't seen it. Seen the first one.
I think I watched them all recently. I was like, you know what? These movies all hold up pretty well. They're all by Barry Sonnenfeld. I think they've all got possibly Danny Elfman music. And Will Smith is good in everything, usually. But the third one, they go back in time. Or Will Smith goes back in time.
To the Wild Wild West.
To the Wild...
Jim West. Desperado.
All right, let's talk about Wild West instead.
God damn.
Oh, what a movie. What a steampunk masterpiece.
I think I saw it in the cinemas.
Oh, hell yeah. Wild Wild West. Had the theme song by Will Smith featuring Stevie Wonder and Sisqó from the band Drew Hill, known for when he went solo and recorded The Thong Song.
Oh my goodness, I did not know that he was in a band before that.
My wife and my work wife were talking the other day.
Excuse me?
Two different wives. One at work and one at home. No, it was a lady that I don't work with anymore. But when we did work together recently, we got along so well that we decided that I had a home wife and a work wife.
Okay.
It's not a polycule. I want to stress that.
Very optimistic of you to think that we would understand that context without great discussion. But anyway,
why I just breezed past it. I didn't want all the discussion. How many wives were mortified the other night over dinner when I explained that the Baha Men song Who Let the Dogs Out is actually about ugly women?
Goddamn. I thought you were about to say that it's a cover.
It is not. It is a song about having to deal with ugly women. And when you put it into that context, it's no good. It's no good. Let me check out these lyrics. Last year in the dance, you had a ball. You called me Millibug and Skettle. Get back, Gruffy. Mash Scruffy. Get back, you flea-infested mongrel.
Holy cow.
Who let the dogs out? Woof. Woof, 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 woof.
Woof.
My goodness.
So you were saying, is that it? Hang on. Where did we come from? Favorite movie?
Wait a minute.
Men in Black 3.
Maybe I'm wrong about Who Let the Dogs Out.
It is a cover?
So anyway, they go back in time.
Okay.
Will Smith goes back in time. Not to the Wild West. That's your fault. That's on you. Anyway, watch Wild Wild West. Thank you for getting us back there. Watch Wild Wild West, starring Will Smith as Jim West. Steampunk movie featuring half of Kenneth Branagh. The other half of him is a steampunk locomotive spider. And then he makes a giant steampunk spider at the end.
So,
top quality film.
So
Will Smith, however, stars in Men in Black 3, right, in which he goes back to the
60s. 1860s?
And Tommy Lee Jones's character is played in his younger form by Josh Brolin. And Josh Brolin just does an impression of Tommy Lee Jones for the whole movie, and it's great. Because if you remember the Oliver Stone movie, It was a weird movie. It was like the biopic about George Bush Jr. that came out like way too soon. People were like, he was in office like 2 years ago. What is this?
Okay.
But yeah, it featured Josh Brolin doing like a really dead on George Bush Texas accent and everything for the whole movie. And then a whole bunch of people around him who seemed like they were doing very bad impressions. Like Richard Dreyfuss as Dick Cheney. He just seemed like someone doing Cheney on SNL, you know?
Yep.
Yep. Yep. And I think Tandy Newton as Condoleezza Rice. They just went, here, wear the suit. Do the voice. So Josh Brolin is a delight in Men in Black 3. And they close the arc of all three movies very nicely.
I see.
So that's why it's my favorite movie, Lucy.
Okay.
We have another question here from Lucy Valentine.
Well, so, speaking of the Wild West, my favorite movie.
Hold on. We have another important question from Lucy. Fine. Do you think Will Smith had a nice time filming Men in Black 3?
The fact that he came back for a third one, I think, speaks to how pleasant the set was. Catering was probably nice. Probably have the nice, like, apple muffins with a little bit of sprinkle of, like, caster sugar on top. Not the shitty, like, muesli muffins.
Yeah.
I think that's what keeps him coming back.
Friend of the show, DivX Greg. Lover
of
the show.
Wild West. So, my favorite movie is There Will Be Blood. Thank you.
Oh, really? All right. I love in... Have you... Are you much of a Paul F. Tompkins fan?
Yes.
Have you heard his set, Labouring Under Delusions?
I have not.
It's a very, very good set of stand-up comedy that I highly recommend.
Did you get to Paul F. Tompkins from Paul T. Anderson?
No. I got to Paul F. Tompkins because he did this set called Labouring Under Delusions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically where he walks through... He walks, like, steps all the way through knowing that he wanted to do stand-up comedy, at, like, as a teen, but also being like, I have to go to university because that's what you're supposed to do. So, he, like, steps basically the whole way through his career from dropping out of uni to just, like, working in shitty retail jobs to starting to take off as a stand-up to getting roles in a bunch of films, including... Being asked to table read for Magnolia. So he has an anecdote about like going to do a read for the first ever movie that he would have a screen part in.
Yeah.
And getting sat down at this table doing the table read and like all these people start sitting down and the last seat is next to him and somebody pops themselves down in it and he like gets tapped on the shoulder by someone saying, "Hi, I'm Tom." And it's Tom Cruise.
Right.
Introducing himself. And he was like, yes, of course you are most famous man on the planet. So, a bunch of very good stories about that. And one of the last stories in the movie is him talking about being in There Will Be Blood.
Mm-hmm.
And his role is like one line across from Daniel Day-Lewis, who just screams his line in his face, you know. Very good story. Which I highly recommend. Please do listen to it. It's very good. I don't want to attempt to do it justice by reciting all the bits. That's not how you get someone on board. But yeah, multiple run-ins with P.T. Anderson and supposedly going to be in a movie and then getting completely cut out of the movie. That kind of stuff. Oh, dear. Anyway, back to lover of the show, DivX Greg. What's the horniest anime that you'd admit to watching?
I mean, I know... I know the practical answer to this. I think I watched the first four episodes of Devilman Crybaby.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is just feberphilia.
Yeah. There is a bit of it like that, isn't there? My anime experience is pretty thin on the ground. The main things that I remember watching as like a teen would be or later, like the only sort of memorable movies to me was
don't mind me, I just closed the tab as I do when I'm habitually closing all of my tabs because people that keep more than about four tabs open at any one point in time are sex criminals. But occasionally,
I feel like you've done this like a handful of times in the last several weeks.
A horrible conviction of mine.
Oh dear, oh dear. Anyway, I remember watching the there is an anime version or a manga version or whatever of Street Fighter 2, the animated movie. And you can watch the Japanese dub. Which has whatever soundtrack it's got on there, or if you watch the English dub, it's got a different soundtrack on there, including stuff like Korn, which is awesome. Awesome to have scenes of Street Fighter characters facing off as Jonathan Davis goes, "Are you ready?"
So that's cool, but it's not like insanely horny.
But right. The character Chun-Li showers at some point and has a big titties and ass out and everything, and then it immediately turns into like an attempted rape scene or something. Oh, because it's horny for all the wrong reasons. Also, I feel like Ninja Scroll was a movie watching.
Yeah, no, I watched Ninja Scroll.
Also, titties, also sexual assault.
Yes.
And I remember being shown a tape by somebody when I was in like high school, maybe, that was one of the Legend of the Overfiend movies.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, which again, it's just rape. It's just getting raped with tentacles. So, like, I guess my question is, if that's the sampling of just movies I can remember watching, is all anime that horny on some level? And I assume the answer is yes.
I feel like we need Lucy on to
clarify some anime for us. Friend of the show, Michael, asks, favorite co-op games?
Oh, damn. Yeah. Do you like co-op, or is that too... Like, working together towards a common cause for you?
No, I like that, particularly if it's done well. I really liked... obviously, there's old arcade games that I liked that were co-op. Like, there was a really good game. Might have been, like, a Konami game or a Taito game that was Elevator Action Returns. So there was like the original Elevator Action, which is like a Commodore 64 great game. And then they did like a remake of it in like good animation, sort of anime style, like good mechanics and gameplay and everything. Very cool looking game. And then they made it an arcade cabinet. And anything like that that you can play with two people at once is cool.
Yeah.
But my favorite co-op game ever, probably, was the PS2 or PS3. I can't remember which generation it was, but it was the Rockstar adaptation of The Warriors.
Oh, yeah, no, I heard good things about this.
That game fucking whipped ass. It was like a really good three-dimensional, like, Double Dragon or Gauntlet or whatever type beat-em-up. And yeah, that, like, if you had two players, it just introduced this like big layer of co-op in it, where you could just like grab dudes and hold them for the other guy. You could like do things together. You could pass stuff back and forth. Like, it really, really added an extra dimension to it. In the same way, there was a lot of like environmental stuff in that game. Like, if you were doing a combo on someone next to a brick wall, part of it could just be grabbing them by the back of the head and slamming their face into the wall. Big blood splatters and everything. Very good.
I feel
but
like
I haven't played that many very modern co-op games, I think. Like, as in I play single player or multiplayer, but not specifically co-op.
Yeah, I feel like it was a very Xbox One kind of thing as well. Or like, so there's this period, I guess, from... the like 64 kind of you know, Perfect Dark kind of deal carried over into the Xbox One. You know, you got the like Halo co-op was fantastic, of course, like local, and I think I played through the second one like all co-op the first time I played it through.
Well, I suppose it makes more sense as a mechanic. Well, not more sense, but like it's a, I guess it's a natural thing to do with a gaming system that would, like, if someone was going to have more than one person on it, they would both be sitting there using the same unit on the same TV.
Yep.
So it makes more sense as a thing to say, hey, let's develop this so that if you got more than one person, it's more interesting. Mm. Like, as that layer between either single player, where you would just be taking turns, or a thing where you play against each other, like Mario Kart or something like that.
Yeah.
Or GoldenEye, you know. You couldn't co-op or anything on GoldenEye.
But I will say... couple of absolute gems. Chaos Theory, Splinter Cell Chaos Theory on the 360. And on, I think I played it on PC actually at the time. Had like a LAN co-op thing, and so it was a bunch of the missions from the like main thing redesigned for co-op. And there was voice chat, so you were both the like Splinter Cell dudes. But like, if you were using the voice chat and you spoke while, like, the enemies in game were near you, they would hear you.
Oh, nice.
And so you'd have to, like, coordinate the stuff beforehand. It was really cool. But the best co-op game ever made is Journey. I will say, think we may have talked about this previously. It's a game in which you have no way of communicating with the other player except for making little chimes. Press the button and you make chimes. You hold down the button longer, make bigger chimes. But while you're together, you move faster and fly faster and, like, work off one another. And as well as that, it's just a phenomenal once-off game where the people that I played it, they were all just, like, working towards, like, getting to the end of this. There was no, like, horrible racism or whatever, and it's all just random pickup kind of thing. So you're in the world and then someone will just be at the other side of the arena or whatever, like, at the other side of the level, and you'll go, oh, there's someone there, and then you just start working with one another until, like, one of you drops out, and then eventually someone else will be introduced to your game. It was just really, really good stuff, and I think it's been re-released for PS4. I would recommend it at any price.
Oh, it's free. It's free on PS4.
Free on PS4. Yeah, yep. Absolutely pick it up.
Let's breeze through a couple more here while we got a bit of time. Friend of the show, Aaron, asks, do you listen to music while playing video games? I feel like I used to a lot more. You know, a much dumber thought that I've had is I have found myself thinking more than once that I would like it if on my phone I could play music quietly in the background of a podcast. Like, and because obviously you can't run a music player and a podcast at the same time on your fucking phone. But that's been my dumbest thought. I don't really listen to music at the same time anymore. I feel, you know what? I used to play, like, Carmageddon on my PC like something on an MP3 player at the same time. You know, bit of fucking, like, bad old punk, pop punk shit. Yep. Play a bit of that.
Yeah, I feel like, and there was a point where, I think this was, like, late 90s, where they realized people were doing this, and so they started to introduce, like, the ability to do it from the game as well, which was always appreciated. But I don't feel like we're doing that anymore.
Well, I was going to say, I didn't even realize until recently that, on the PS4, you can play, like, Spotify while you're playing stuff.
And I used to do that all the time on 360. I would always turn off the game music and just do it through the 360 dashboard. But yeah, like, on PS4, there's, like, customized... They will produce, playlists for the games. Some games will even integrate, like, the characters, like, playlists as well. Like, I think maybe Uncharted 4 or something will do that as well. Plenty of good stuff, but weirdly, I don't do it anymore.
All right, hold on.
Except for playing all of the Sofyan Stevens albums while I'm playing SimCity or City Skylines. I don't know why.
Let me see. Friend of the show, Richard Fuck, says, what game should I play while I'm home today with terrible food poisoning?
Is there a list? Is there a console?
Nope. Unspecified.
All right.
Snake on your phone.
What you should do, and I mean this unironically, is download ScumVM, the LucasArts game emulator. You're going to want to download the FM Towns version of Loom. You don't want the CD audio version because that has scenes cut out, and it also has a bunch of the music cut out, weirdly. You want the FM Towns version of Loom. You should be able to find it. You can beat Loom in about 3 hours, and it should be playable on any modern PC. And you'll just have a great time playing the 1989 LucasArts forgotten gem, Loom. That's my recommendation for Richard Fuck.
There you go. I reckon we might just about be out of time. So, good luck to me when I try to recap what we talked about during this episode. Yeah.
I think we talked about when Will Smith's character in Men in Black 3 goes back in time to the Wild Wild West.
Yes.
Whose song I am completely unable to recollect now because the album Mouth Moods has totally destroyed that song for me.
Well, I mean, there's no excuse really for not being able to conjure it.
Check out the album Mouth Moods, which which mashes up the song Wild Wild West with Kid Rock's. I think it's Bawada. How do you say that? Bawada bar.
Bombada bomba dang a dang.
Yes, I think that's what they mash it up with. It's very good. Oh my God. Do that.
Yeah, enjoy that. Enjoy that, everybody. Thanks for your time. Thanks for your support for the show. Thanks in general. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Hey, it's Kid Rock's Cowboy. Jim West, Desperado, Rough Rider. No, you don't want nada. None of this. Six gunning this, brother running this. Buffalo soldier. Look, it's like I told you. Any damsel that's in distress, be out of that dress when she meet Jim West. Rough neck, so go check the lawn and buy. Watch your step, reflex, and get a hole in your side. Swallow your pride. Don't let your lip react. You don't want to see my hand where my hip be at. With Artemis, from the start of this, running the game. James West, taming the West, so remember the name. Now who you gonna call? Not the GB. Now who you gonna call? If you ever riff with fever wanna bust, break out before you get bum rushed at the Wild Wild West. When I roll into the Wild Wild West, when I stroll into the Wild Wild West, when I bounce into the Wild Wild West, Cisco, Cisco. Wild.